Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for CEO Exclusive, brought to you by Annona Enterprises.
We are live at the Vistage Executive Summit here in Atlanta at the Cobb Galleria. And with me, I have Keith Finger, who talks about revenue generation. So, Keith, you're a Vistage speaker. Tell us a little bit about what you share with CEOs to help them ignite their revenues.
Well, what I share with them is that they need to take a more strategic approach to revenue generation. Frequently, people think of marketing and they think of Facebook and trade show giveaways and cute and pretty things, but marketing is actually much more strategic than that. And when they understand that and they take that strategic approach, then the things that they do that help reach out to customers will be more successful.
So when you say strategy is a word I love.
I thought you would.
Yes. So tell me a little bit about what that looks like in real life, because strategy, people can think of it as a big word, and strategy often feels irrelevant to daily operations for CEOs,
right,
which is why they don't
right.
like to do it.
Right.
So when you talk about strategy as it applies to revenue generation, they love revenue generation.
That's right.
They don't necessarily love strategy. So how do you tie those two things together and make it meaningful?
Well, marketing, because it is much more than promotion. Most people think marketing is promotion. They think, how do you market your business? But marketing is actually very strategic things such as what are you selling? Who are you selling it to? What kind of markets? What's your distribution? Are you using inside sales, outside sales, agents? And also, of course, promotion. Now, there's in the service economy, there's also, I'm having a little bit of a brain thing here.
It's that time of the afternoon.
There's also a process. There we go. People and what's called physical evidence. So because you can't pick up a service, you need to have some proof that you can deliver. So that's testimonials, case studies, things like that. All that figures into your marketing. But also marketing, successful revenue generation also involves your sales operations and also things like customer satisfaction and employee satisfaction. I call that the revenue generation ecosystem. And so knowing how all those pieces play together are important. And that's part of your go-to-market, your marketing, your revenue generation strategy.
And so how often do you urge your clients to undertake a strategic process, and what's the process that you counsel that they follow in order to develop this marketing strategy?
Well, there needs to be, at least annually, they need to look at what's happening in the marketplace, what's happening and why. Sometimes people do SWOT, and the SWOT, you know, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats, that can be a very inward-looking kind of process, and you can sometimes get information that makes you feel good, but it's not really effective. A process that I like to use is called PEST, which is political, economic, societal, and technological. There you're looking at what are the forces outside the business that the company needs to look at that could be affecting it now and in the future. And so really that's what people need to look at, not so much what are our strengths, which some strengths can also be weaknesses. If you're strong serving a particular vertical market, maybe that's also a weakness because you're only serving that market or you're not serving others. But knowing what are the external forces, the things that you can't control that can influence your company and affect you, that's really strong stuff.
Hmm. And so you are a Vistage speaker. Tell me a little bit about why you think the Vistage community is important. Why do you want to be involved, and why is it important for you to be involved in this community?
Well, Vistage members, they're really concerned about their businesses. Not to say that other people aren't, but they've gone the extra step to belong to a peer-to-peer group and get advice and get counsel from both other members and from the chairs. And so when I talk to Vistage groups, they have a different level of understanding, a different level of enthusiasm than other types of groups. They're really hungry for the information. So as a speaker, I feel great because they really want it. And you see that in the enthusiasm, you see that in the questions. When I pair people up to go through exercises, you can see the way they're working with each other. They really want to solve problems and get things done. That's why it's a great group to work with.
And so tell me about your experience here today. Have you had the opportunity to see some of the speakers, other speakers who are here today?
Excellent speakers here today. Really good. And the gentleman who spoke about public speaking.
Yeah, Sekou. We've been hearing about him all day.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. What an incredible guy. What an incredible speaker. You know, it's funny. A lot of the stuff that people say, they say it in a way that it hits you more than if someone else had said it. And he has an incredible style, an incredible delivery, and just someone who I'm thinking about all the time now. You know, as I'm talking to you right now, I'm thinking about the things that he said. I'm thinking, gosh, how do I apply that? How do I say that? What do I do here? So it's just a really good group of speakers. Gentleman who I just came out of that session, the founder of Geek Squad, talking about how he got the company started and things he did to kind of bootstrap it to make it what it is today. Just really good information here.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the things that you think CEOs who, we actually had Robert on a little bit earlier on today. So what are some tactical things that you've learned or you think people could have learned from today's session that they can take back tomorrow or next week and apply to their business?
Wow. I would say thinking about public speaking is to be yourself. And a lot of people get up on stage. Well, first of all, as he said, a lot of people are afraid of public speaking, more so than, what do you say, spiders and death?
Yeah.
So don't be afraid. Just go up there and be yourself and don't be stiff. You don't have to be a public speaker like you're the president. The more natural you are, the better you'll feel about doing it and the better your message will come out. So you want to be authentic. That's what I came away with.
And what about from Robert? What are you going to take and apply to or do you think people can apply to their business immediately from what you heard from Robert?
Well, you know, he talked a lot about guerrilla marketing and just doing things in a very unorthodox way. Before his company was big enough to exhibit at some trade shows in Las Vegas, the only way he could get his name out there was to have those little urinal cakes that they have in men's room.
He had, which I've never seen.
That's right. I don't know if they have in ladies' rooms. I don't know.
Urinal cake. I don't know what that is.
It's like a little hockey puck that's a deodorizer.
So
he had some made up with a Geek Squad logo. And he put those in the convention center bathrooms, the ones that he could get to help promote Geek Squad. Then they caught on, and he ended up renting a truck and putting it in the parking lot across the street from the convention center, and having, like I think he said, a bar and a DJ in it. So some things you don't have to do them the way that's expected. If you do them in unexpected ways, especially, you know, it doesn't matter how large you are, but you can always do things in a different way and it gets attention.
Mm-hmm. And as you think about igniting revenue and, you know, doing things in an unorthodox way, what are you thinking about, you know, for the next 5 years, which is the theme of today's event, you know, leading into 2020?
I think marketing has become much more technology focused. Marketing used to be about art and copy, and that's really shifted. It's very data intensive now. And so companies, the way they go after customers and nurture those contacts is very technologically dense. When you think about things like CRM systems like Salesforce.com, email platforms like MailChimp, there's all sorts of analytics that people can use to help understand what customers are doing on their websites, what they're doing with interactions with email. And so companies need to become much more technology savvy on how they reach and nurture customers.
Mm. And as you're talking about technology, you know, one of the things that occurred to me is how inundated with data most of us, you know, most CEOs are, right? We're just completely inundated with data.
Yeah.
So what are the things that you recommend in terms of being able to figure out what data is important, how often to look at? How do you put in a process around, you know, dealing with all that huge volume and deluge of information that CEOs have to deal with now?
I think the easiest thing to do is to think about what are those metrics that help track things that turn into revenue. So if you were to think about, let's say someone wants to make $1 million in revenue and a customer is worth $100,000. That's 10 customers. Well, how many customers do you need? How many interactions do you need to get to that? So you could probably track that. You can probably track how many customers and where those customers come from and how many of those there are. So start with the metrics that track interactions that turn into leads, referrals, and customers. And then you can look at other things like website interactions and things like that. One thing I'm very much against is what I would refer to as vanity metrics. A lot of people think about how many Facebook likes we have or how many, you know, clicks and some things that are very shallow. They have no meaning. If you have a lot of likes, that's great, but how do you turn those into customers? So think about the interactions and the things you can track that tell you more so about people moving into and through the pipeline than other stuff, which is kind of squishy.
Yeah, so let's go down a deeper level on that. So how do you begin to distill which metrics are just vanity and make you feel good? Like, oh, a whole bunch of people went to my website. And that might be meaningful for some customers, right, versus others. So how do you begin to distinguish which are vanity metrics and which are the metrics that really matter?
Well, I guess if you could look at a metric and say, so what? Like, what can you do about it? That's probably a vanity metric. So if you say, I've got 1,000 likes, so what? How many of them bought? Do you know how many of them bought? Do you know why they bought? Versus, I've got these people, and of the ones that are likes, a certain percentage of likes always turn into customers. So if we know that, then we can probably say, yes, a like is 50% likely to turn into a customer. But to say likes alone, I don't know what that would mean for someone. Most folks, it means they sent out an email and they said, please like us. And so they did. But did that turn into something else? Are you using that information, that interaction with the customer? They liked you. Did they get something out of it? Did you send them something? Some sort of offer? Something that turned them into a customer. They're already a fan. We don't know how strong a fan they are, but they're already a fan. But did that mean they became a customer or a prospect?
Now, you know, one of the observations that was made earlier on today, that the only marketing now is digital marketing. How do you feel about that? I mean, do you think that pretty much the whole world of marketing has gone digital and gone online, and things that used to be kind of offline marketing are pretty much useless and obsolete?
Not at all. Not at all. In fact, I think because there is so little direct mail going on, good direct mail, that the opportunity to use direct mail is much greater now for it to be done effectively. I think where I see a problem is not only that people think it's got to be online, but also thinking about it being mainly reactive or inbound, so that people don't effectively engage customers in an outbound manner, in a proactive manner. They say, well, we're going to do SEO, search engine optimization, or we're going to have Google ads or something, and we're just going to wait for it to happen so nothing happens. So you have to both know who you want to go after and how you'll go after them, as well as have a method for people to find you and engage with them if they originate the interaction.
Mm-hmm. So how do you go about helping your customers decipher which media is the right media for them now with all this digital media, the online media, direct mail, you know, phone calls? I mean, do people even do telemarketing anymore? Are there call campaigns? Does that even happen anymore?
There are people that do cold calling, and they do it very well. There are companies that specialize in doing cold calling, and I'm not saying the ones, the people who we get calls from on the weekends or, you know, when we're trying to have dinner, and some of that still goes on nowadays. But there are people who specialize, there are individual salespeople who are very good at leaving a message, and that's really what the problem is. Most people don't like to do it because they think they get voicemail. They don't want to get someone's voicemail. But if you leave a message which talks about something that is unique about what you do or a pain that you solve, you might spark something in someone's mind that they'll give you a call back. So there is a way to use cold calling effectively. But what you need to do is you need to, when you're looking at whatever media to use, you need to talk to customers and prospects and find out where would they go to look for information if they were looking for something like you sell. What words would they be using in searches? What groups do they belong to online? And that's where you kind of need to be. Mm-hmm. It's not what you think, it's what they think.
Mm-hmm. And how do you go about helping your CEOs decipher what the right mix of investment is? Right, because they have 10, 15 different things that they could be looking at. And, you know, my understanding, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, I'm sure, is that most people need to do some sort of a blended strategy, right? It's not all of one.
That's right, a multimodal strategy.
Right. So how do you go about figuring out, well, how much online, how much offline, how much SEO, how much pay-per-click, you know, how much, you know, email, how much, you know, telemarketing, you know, phone calls, all that good stuff?
Well, using some of the information that you learn from customers, that should help you narrow it down pretty quickly. But you also have to kind of do something what's called failing fast. You need to test different areas. So you'll probably spend a little bit more money up front seeing what the response is from different types of, from different channels. And then you're able to narrow that down to the things that seem to be getting the most bang for the buck. Mm-hmm. And as you learn new things, you might add in those because you might get an offer to, maybe you're going to go to a trade show all of a sudden. You learn of a trade show that you'd like to attend. So you always want to have some budget left over, maybe 10%, 15% for opportunities that come up. But because marketing is so data oriented, you can test things quite easily, even if it's just over a few weeks, and see what's working and what's not working, and then focus on those areas that deliver results.
Well, one question that I've had that's come up with marketing is, how do you know when it's not working? Because there's this thing about waiting long enough, right? Not pulling the plug too quickly, but then you want to not keep your investment going too long after the test is run. So how do you know that it's not just that the mode or the campaign needs more time before it starts to work? Is my question clear?
Well, you're right. You're asking about how do we know it's the medium and not the message or something else?
Or, yeah, how do we know that if you say that we're going to run this test for 6 months, how do you know that in the seventh month it wouldn't have worked?
Well, first of all, I think 6 months is way too long to do a test.
Understood. But whether it's 6 weeks or, 7 weeks, how do you know that it's not going to work next week or next month or tomorrow if you pull the plug on a particular test?
Well, depending upon your sales cycle.
Right.
Right. If you sell something that takes 3 months to sell, and you should know within the first few weeks whether you're getting people biting for what would normally be the first part of a buying process. So you should know right then and there whether what words, let's say it's SEO, you should know right then and there what are the things that people are clicking on, what words or phrases or offers are most enticing to people. So that's one way to know right there. What's funny is that sometimes it's the right medium and the right message, but the salespeople are messing it up. So the salespeople are not well trained, and the salespeople can end up throwing off a potential prospect because they are trying to go for the sale too quickly, or they don't have good training. I mean, there's a lot of different ways, a lot of different places where the lead generation can kind of fall apart, where it needs to be optimized. So you've got the message, you've got the medium, you've got the right audience you need to have. You have to have agreement between sales and marketing when that lead's handed off and what's the information that's given to sales. Then what does sales do with it once they get it? If they're not ready for nurturing, or if they're not ready rather to buy or to have the conversation with sales, sales needs to put that back into nurturing for further information, because maybe the person will buy in a month or a year.
Right. So then how do you know those things?
Because you can have metrics between all those. You can look at where prospects are in the buying process when they fall out. And then ask questions around, well, what's happening here? All right. Is it a question of the salesperson? Something's happening once it gets handed off? Or is it something where the information that we're giving before the handoff is not really aligned with what they need to know? Some things you might see a lot of is companies send information out that is kind of brochure-aware. At the very top of the funnel, they're sending stuff which is very company-centric. That's not a great idea. What you want is information that's more educational, more thought leadership. So if you're getting a lot of clicks of people coming into the website or clicking on, let's say, the SEO or the AdWords or the Facebook ad, whatever it may be, but then once they get to the offer, they're not clicking on that, then you got a problem with the offer.
Great. Well, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us about igniting revenue. If people want to get in touch with you to hear more about what they've heard, something that sparked their interest or ignited their interest, how can they do that?
Well, they can call me at 770-309-5651 or go to my website, which is www.ignite-revenue.com.
Thank you so much for being with us, Keith.
Thank you.
This show is brought to you by Annona Enterprises, where strategy is your access to money and performance. Learn more at annonaenterprises.com.